Good evening, and welcome to episode 3 of Tales from the Periphery. I'm your host, Mike Whitaker, and I have a guest this week, this episode. Catalyst demo agent, YouTuber, international man of mystery, organizer of lots of Battletech events in London and the South East, and the man who owns considerably more 3D printed Battletech scenery than I do, Stuart Marsh. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about you?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
All right, now, there's a tradition which actually goes back to my time on Meeples and Miniatures that we start out with new guests by asking them the big question, which is, how did you get into the gaming hobby and then into Battletech, and what have you done up to now in terms of the hobby?
So really, I'm a role player rather than a tabletop gamer. So right the way back from year 7 in school, I started a D&D, we're talking Red Box D&D game, with my history teacher, who basically got a group of us together, started playing, and he left the school, and I took over as a GM, and really I've been a GM ever since. So going all the way through school, running D&D campaigns, and then I found Shadowrun, and Shadowrun was just amazing, very, very different. And the Shadowrun group continued and took all the way through university. And during just at the end of kind of my school days, about 1992, I kind of got into Battletech. And only briefly, I bought the CityTech box, which was great. Had like all those plastic miniatures in. And I actually got a set of Raupar for metal. So I got the Shadowhawk, Crusader, Wolverine, and I think it was the Stinger box. And just dabbled in it, really, and got a few people together. But like a lot of things, back in the day, there were no gaming shops, really. It kind of petered out, and we went different ways. But I kept picking up things here and there, being that I was in Fassa's orbit with Shadowrun, because I was very much into Shadowrun all the way through uni. I really, really kind of just kept tabs on it. And then, had a break, obviously, from, work and real life and kids and all that stuff you get from growing old. Then we kind of got back into gaming with X-Wing, so I actually went into some tabletop gaming, and all through this time we'd been doing like on and off RPG sessions, but the actual kind of first tabletop gaming was X-Wing. And quickly followed by Star Trek Attack Wing, which I have to say is a vice of mine, and I've just spent a large amount of money on free boxes for a game I'm very unlikely to actually play.
Because they're all weirdly different scales, aren't they?
It's got so many flaws, and yet it's so such something I really like. But from there, I got into a big time into a tabletop game called Infinity, and I played that from about 2014 onwards. And then kind of got out of that and into Battletech again. And I went along to a shop, the Mug and Meeple, and got in contact with some people there and had a game and got back into it. Went on to, I'll give you a plug here, Raupar for Europe. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the site. Mm-hmm. If you want to buy some good, if you want to buy some Battletech miniatures, some of which are quite old, some of which are quite good, and you live in Europe and you don't want to...
My pet peeve there is the snake, which still looks like it was made out of Lego.
And you don't want to pay the huge import costs.
Indeed.
You can actually get really good miniatures in Raupar for Europe, but you can also get really good books. And I picked up a 2015 copy of Total Warfare. And this was just before the box that changed everything. You know what that box was, don't you?
A Game of Armor Combat,
and that changed everything. And really, that was... So I was kind of just into Battletech again, just before, the big box dropped and everyone went crazy. And then the first Kickstarter...
I missed that.
How could you miss that? And it was wonderful. But all through that time, I'd also been accumulating large amounts of heavy metal miniatures as well. And of course, once your kind of appetite is whetted with a few plastic miniatures and you want more, then your only place to go is to do some metal miniatures. And I got involved in running some events at the Mug and Meeple. We did the worldwide event 2018, Requiem for a Blue Star. Was that the 2018 one?
I don't know. I didn't really get back into Battletech until about 2023, yeah. Would you believe?
And the funny thing with the Requiem of the Blue Star one, it was all these mechs I'd never heard of. And so I actually ended up doing a big order over to Ironwind and getting things like the Prefect, the Rook.
So this was what, late Dark Ages stroke early Ilkhan?
Yeah, it was basically about the time Shattered Fortress was out.
Right.
But I think it was just before or just as the box had dropped. And probably wasn't their best scenario, but it was basically a setting like 3150. And that was my real kind of like introduction to running events. And we went from there. And that's where we are today. So I've been growing and growing in events and moving different around. And somehow ended up being a Catalyst demo agent. Someone suggested it would be a good idea and starting to coordinate a community.
Yeah, which we'll have a bit of a chat about, I think, community building and generally being a demo agent, giving people with the hobby a bit later on. But yeah, you, apart from the fact that I started with war games, it's not a very different story to mine. I got into the role play side of Battletech first, played MechWarrior, and then moved on from that.
I mean, I absolutely, the thing that really captivated me of all of the Battletech supplements was the MechWarrior second edition RPG, mm-hmm. because that actually had the story. And I'm always a person for the story, you know, my Achilles heel and everything is I'm a narrative person, which means that much to the annoyance of everyone I play with, whenever we set up a game, I'm always thinking, oh, when did this happen? And would it have happened? And how did it fit in? And I like the whole kind of narrative and the historical part of it. I like thinking of Battletech as historical wargaming in sci-fi space in the future. So kind of future historical wargaming.
This is exactly why I play it. It's why it's my favorite. I think it's my favorite non-historical game.
I have to be careful and I have to reel myself in because we have to remember there are lots of other people who don't feel like that.
Yeah.
Now, so that's an interesting thing. A lot of people don't, we'll talk about it a bit later in the community building, but a lot of people don't feel that they want to read the books or get into something. They want to play the game. And that's the kind of different size where, you know, I'm a kind of narrative RPG sort of person. Some people are more the kind of tabletop gamers. They want to, you know, sit down and roll dice. The beer and pretzels game.
Yeah. Which Battletech has the great advantage that you can do that in top light. Yeah, it can be both. Cool. Right. Let's go for the quick fire round. I know the answer to the first one. I'm absolutely certain. Classic or Alpha Strike?
Definitely classic. So although you would. Just for legal purposes, we can't call it classic anymore. We get told off calling it classic. It's Battletech or Alpha Strike.
Yeah,
people still call it classic though.
Yeah, I've seen enough of your tables and shots on the Discord to know that you're very much a Hexes man, aren't you?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I've played a bit of Alpha Strike.
Yeah,
but classic is where my heart is.
So, toys on the table, painted or don't have to be?
Don't have to be. I mean, I enjoy painting. Yeah, and you know, I kind of really don't mind too much if people have to proxy or things.
Yeah, seems reasonable. Right, where are we next? Favorite era?
Now this is a tough one, really, but I'm going to have to say pre-Ilkhan Dark Age because one of the things that really captivated me to the whole thing was the Shattered Fortress book, and that really captivated me. But on some days, I like to say Jihad as well. I think it's so underrated because of the constrictions that Catalyst Game Labs had at the time. It wasn't Catalyst Game Labs, sorry, WizKids at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because they couldn't write any fiction because they were banned from writing fiction because of their deal with the Clicky Tech novels. And so the it's still the books were done in a very brilliant way, but like Shadowrun, actually very much written as if they were but done by journalists or news articles and not written as source books are we've gone back to now. I kind of miss that. It's quite a nice way of writing source books, but some people it wasn't that popular.
I have to admit I have a kind of soft spot for the conceit of source books being in character things that, like true histories, you are subject to the bias of the writer.
Yeah, all of those from Dawn of the Jihad to what are they called? each individual yearbook. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what they're called now.
I'm blanking as well.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
So all of the different, you know, stories as it goes through. And it is written in such a nice way. And I know it's, of course, it's a lot of people don't like it because it's thought of being the culling of different things and people's favorite units suddenly got nuked. And but at the time, I still think it was a good thing for the game, as they were desperately trying to keep it alive under the shadow of Clicky Tech.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Right, favorite faction?
Or Clan Jade Falcon. Although really? I've really, really kind of gone out into Warrior House of Jewelry for Capellan Confederation and Tent Festetti. And I have to say my love for the Tent Festetti comes from the books, particularly the... I'm forgetting which one it is now. The one that was set on the hyperpulse generator on the highland. Mm-hmm. Northwind, when they send the Tent Festetti there as well.
So that takes us through favourite unit as well, by the sound of it.
So favourite unit is in the mech, or
in lore unit?
Oh, definitely I would say Delta Galaxy.
Right.
As in the what's her name? Chistu.
Yeah.
That's a character that I really hope they do a lot with. Ever since they wrote the double book, what was it called? The Hammer and Anvil and and she's on the planet and Melvisa Hayes and has told her to use nukes and she refuses to use the nukes.
Yeah.
And she's always been a character that's done really well, but we hope to see more of her, and I think we're kind of stuck now waiting.
Hopefully not for long.
The next, I know, our wonderful new Catalyst demo. I don't know if you heard the news about the new Catalyst demo team leader.
Yeah, Michael.
Michael is probably in the last revisions of the next book, which will be on Terra. And hopefully we'll find out more about what happened to it.
Yeah, I shame it's hung in limbo for so long. But
that's it, Stephanie Chister.
Stephanie Chister, yeah. Yes. Okay, and the last one is, how big did you go on the Mystery Kickstarter?
See, I've got a cheat to this. I went small because I only went for $150 and very little extras. But that's because I've got a friend who's a big capper.
Oh,
and he went to Kerensky.
Oh, jealous.
I know. And he, of course, unfortunately, has been, without saying who he is, been caught up massively in the postage things. We were joking that he would have to remortgage his house. But yes. I'm not actually sure if you found it funny or not, to be quite honest, because it was quite
a huge amount.
So, and that's come a problem. I think there are some problems with the people that went into the big capper, who got basically two of everything for 2 years plus two of everything on the Kickstarter. What people don't realize is those people had to pay VAT and postage on every item.
Yeah,
which actually means, and this was a bit of a flaw in the whole thing, that they actually ended up paying more just in the postage than the actual product was worth.
Hopefully, that's getting itself resolved, which is actually a beautifully seamless link onto the news. There are a few things to cover that I'm sure you'll want to comment on. We seem to have some updates on the Kickstarter shipping, in that they are hoping to get a spreadsheet from the shipping agents tomorrow, in fact, with a bit of luck, and should be giving us better shipping figures, including not charging the Savannah map box as a BFM.
It's the story of my life, the idea of the spreadsheet that didn't import correctly. being a teacher who writes a lot of stuff on spreadsheets and imports them onto archaic systems that don't work. That's often the story of my life. But I can understand they had a spreadsheet, they tried to import it into the system used by the distributor, and it went wrong.
Yeah.
And unfortunately it wasn't caught earlier. I think people are right, because it occurred over the Easter weekend. It was particularly a bad time. I didn't get caught by it at all. I think I had a shipping of $25 and paid it straight away.
But then
I know people that got hundreds.
Well, I pledge battalion, so I have the Savannah box, which screws up shipping. And of course, I mean, there's two things here that are. I mean, there's a saying in my business, which is programming, that you don't release things on Fridays unless you enjoy working weekends. And the other is, never underestimate the don't attribute to malice that which can be blamed on stupidity, incompetence, or a program with not enough caffeine at 3 a.m.
or spreadsheets.
Indeed, yes. I'm very impressed with the effort Catalyst is putting to getting this straight, and hopefully it should be all good by next week with a bit of luck, which will be good.
And I do wonder. One thing that worried me is that I think that, just talking from a UK perspective, that maybe there were lots of players out there who didn't realise maybe that they were going to get charged VAT. That because VAT is basically charged on delivery, not if it's over 135. I've had to look into this several times buying stuff from Europe.
Yes.
If it's over 135 euros, then it has to be, that has to be paid by the import and not by the seller. So obviously everybody did have a 20% VAT bill coming up, and then the shipping on top. And I'm not sure what happened with the shipping, because not only was the shipping high, but I was wondering why, what was happening.
As I understand it, they got the wrong column on the spreadsheet for the shipping. They got the one that included all the shipping and handling charges that Catalyst was supposed to pay to get it to the distributors.
Yeah, and because the last Kickstarter, what happened is everything was shipped to a distributor in the UK.
That's what they were trying to do, I believe, but they got the shipping charges wound up on the wrong row, or the wrong row got uploaded to Backerkit. Either way, hopefully it's going to be resolved.
Oh, hopefully. I mean, also, we still don't. I mean, this is a big thing for our community as a whole, but because we've only just had the BFM drop in shops. I haven't bought one myself, but the fact that we don't have a UK or European distributor.
No, indeed.
And you, like me, probably you go to places like Germany.
I just hit reload on my bookmarked Zatu Battletech search every so often.
Yeah, I mean,
they've just got a whole bunch of salvage boxes and stuff in, so something's clearly shipped.
But Fantasy World in Germany, who are good for Ironwind miniatures as well.
Yep. I need to keep an eye on those, particularly since I have
a Gathering.
Friend. Yeah, I have a friend in Germany who could import stuff for me. So.
Oh, that's nice.
The Gathering, well, she comes over here about once every 3 or 4 months.
Or Sci-Fi Trader is another German.
I think
company.
Andy said good things about them when he was on. Right, next up, a new Hubble bundle, which has satisfied my large hole in all the Dark Age books that I don't have.
That's great. I mean, it's great that they've actually spent a lot of time. I mean, I've seen behind the scenes, because being on the Catalyst demo team, I get certain perks.
Yeah,
and
me
I've
too.
Seen that they've gradually been, you know, re-releasing these.
Yeah.
And which is nice new covers as well, some of them.
Some of them are, yeah. But they've...
I think I've read almost about half of them now. And my next one to go for is the whole kind of Marek trilogy.
I'll be absolutely honest with you. I'm about 85 years behind on the books. I'm just dipping into the Fedcom Civil War. I've had to take a bit of a break because of other things I've needed to read. But I need to catch. I've been slowly working through stuff. I need to get caught up again. But
and
yes.
the thing that got me into the books, really, and I think that if you are new to Dark Age, a kind of nice book that is nice to start with, because you can read it without necessarily knowing everything, was Bonfire of Worlds. And it was kind of produced as a end to when Rock were basically, I can't remember what it is, but when they were basically stopping the Dark Age novels, they released Bonfire of Worlds, and Bonfire of Worlds runs up to the beginning of Shattered Fortress, the source book. And then we had the kind of big hole in books, and that's what they're kind of filling in now.
Yeah.
That kind of hole between the dates of 3145 and 3150. between Shattered Fortress, during Shattered Fortress, so after the Bonfire of Worlds book, and that's been an issue. But when Catalyst finally got kind of the writing part back up, and we've seen that, you know, because initially when they bought out the 2018 box set, the writing really hadn't got started. And then it managed to get going. They managed to pick it up, and it's been phenomenally successful. And I think they were probably taken aback by how popular that was. And then that, of course, led to things like Shrapnel, which is just, I think...
apart from the fact that the queue is currently a year long for getting your submissions reviewed.
Yeah, every so often, being a kind of a semi-writer myself, every so often I'm tempted by the idea of writing something.
I have one in the queue, and depending on how that goes, I have a couple of others I want to submit, but we'll see how it goes.
I think I'd get too impatient and end up publishing it on my blog anyway, which you're not allowed to do.
Well, yeah, you aren't. But anyway, that's the Humble Bundle. If you've already subscribed to last year's Humble Bundle, there is everything since then for a massive $18, which is at fundamentally about 25 cents a book. It's worth every penny.
Yeah, they're an absolutely brilliant way of getting all your backlog of books.
And I even have a spare Kindle. Since my late mum left me it to put more on, so I'm doing all right. Other final piece of news, we'll have merch very soon for the podcast.
Just
run a test shirt through streetshirts.co.uk, which has come out looking very nice, except the logo's a little bit small for Wargamer XXL. So running another test one. I'll probably be at Salute wearing it if anybody's at Salute. I managed to get this episode out before Salute, which is this weekend. And it'll be available on the site fairly soon. Cool.
I'm hoping to see you there. I hope I'll be there as well.
Well, I think the plan is to try and get some of us together and have a bit of a chat about demos in the UK, which would be in community building generally in the UK, which would be a great thing. Yeah, well, I think that is the plan. That's why I actually decided to go. That and I've probably got money burning a hole in my pocket as usual.
No, I'm the opposite. I'm going there strictly to window shop. And the fact that I feel a bit guilty because really, unfortunately, due to real world life, large piles of marking and different things, I missed, and also because of the popularity, I missed the boat on getting a table at Salute. I was going to, because we'd actually did a table in the year after the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 21. We did a table at Salute. But at that point, only half the tables were actually taken. It was very quiet, of course, because post-pandemic, and you had to show your COVID passport on the door.
That was the weird Salute in November or October, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you basically couldn't get in. The bouncers were on the door checking your COVID passport. Yeah. And then we missed the boat on this year's, which is a shame.
We did the 2023 one. We did our big Dam Busters game last year.
I won't make the mistake this year. Next year, I'll make sure I put it well ahead in the calendar. And
I think there's a certain intent among some of the demo agents to make sure there's quite a decent sized Battletech presence.
Definitely.
Yes. Right. Hobby roundup. Let's do a quickie. Just any new toys recently?
No, it's been a kind of a quiet time for buying. We're all kind of on bated breath. It wasn't recently, but about a few months ago, we got seven people together. Now, I dread to say this number because people's wives might be listening. But between the seven of us, we dropped about just over £1,000 for Ironwind miniatures through the gathering. And some of those were things like Aries and different things. So there were some lovely miniatures in there, some of the dark, and again these are things that you can't get in the UK
or certainly can't get in plastic.
No,
because the plastics are just about hit jihad, maybe.
Yeah,
in terms of
that was really, really nice. I got a full set of Celestials.
Oh, nice.
And I think that's probably one of my recent things. And I actually got to play for the first time recently. I got to play the full set of Celestials with a C3 eye network. And my opponent was very, very disgusted with me. It was
small, it's fast, it's standing right next to you, and everything else has that range.
Yeah, the wonderful bit when a Malek, which is the little 30-ton fast one, runs up to a Thunderhawk with three Gauss rifles and then just shicks it with a retractable blade and takes out its gyro.
And then says, "P.S. guys, he's over here."
But that's definitely one of the harder things to get into in the game is understanding C3I. Mm. Or C3 in general, but C3I particularly.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the club, we are basically, we've got probably 8 or 9 people interested in the game and picking up a few more every so often. And we've just started moving up from intro tech. Played a big game a couple of weeks ago where we actually introduced things like NARC and big Stalker 5M with NARC bouncing around going, "NARC, you see that big lance of archers and things over there? Duck!"
Everyone has to learn how to do indirect fire properly.
Yeah.
It's a skill. And NARC's nice because once the NARC beacon's on there, you've got
an extra dice. Targeting. All your IF1 mechs become IF2.
Oh, Alpha Strike speak.
Yes, similar things happen in Classic, but essentially, it boils down to indirect fire suddenly starts getting very unpleasant.
Oh, my favorite version of NARC was the one of the later NARCs. It's in Total Warfare, where it sends out an emission that causes all Arrow 4 missiles to home in on it. That's just not funny.
No. Particularly if that if Arrow 4 is coming from way off table and suffering from not arriving for a bit.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
But people forget with that in what I would call the standard rule set, and you know, terminology is something Battletech struggled with, but let's go with standard rule set, which is technically anything that's in Total Warfare or the tech manual. Mm-hmm. People forget that C3 and semi-guided munitions are in there, but the understanding of how they work, you need the tech manual. And if there's one book that people find it very hard to find and get into, is the tech manual, which is the book. But while it has lots of lore, and that's one of the things I love it for, it also is the only book that actually explains battle value. And that's a flaw. I mean, if you're lucky, of course, you can go to the master unit list. And you can find the battle value of anything, but nowhere does it explain how the cost of C3 works, how the cost of semi-guided munitions works. In actual fact, I've done a lot of kind of talking to the people at Megamech, and I'm not going to claim any credit because they do wonderful things over there, where we actually got to kind of explain how the battle value should work on Megamech, because quite a while ago, it didn't calculate them correctly, and now the most up-to-date versions do. They calculate everything for you, so they calculate the extra BV for homing missiles, for Arrow 4, and for semi-guided missiles. But they're all part of what we call the standard rule set, and I think when you're playing a tournament or an event with a standard rule set, that can come as a surprise, because if you're not used to it, it can be very intimidating.
Indeed.
And then you discover ECM.
Yes. I must admit, when I came down and played the 2023 WWE, I got handed a bunch of sheets for the Lancers Committee and went, "Okay, what's that do? What the heck's that do?" And so on. Things that I'd not being... Still, I mean, I learnt my Battletech when Clantech was a neat idea, and I've been skimming the rule books, but you know, suddenly discover things like that Stalker with hardened armor. Dear Lord, what is this thing?
Yeah, no, we should say I ran the what's it called? What was it called? I've absolutely forgotten what it was called.
I only saw the thing for it the other day.
Yeah, so the last worldwide event.
Yes.
With the new Ill clan, we were sorting out. Yeah, so we ran that down in, well, thanks to the people at the Enfield Gamers, And they hosted us up there and in the United Reformed Church in Enfield. And we had, I was quite surprised this thing. We had 11, maybe 12 players. In 13.
At the cost of food places.
It was a lot. Ah, it's at cost of food places. Thank you for coming. So it was really, really good. I mean, it was also very accessible because they did it using maps that existed, except they made one error. It's a critical error. When they did the maps for it, and they chose four maps, and it all looked really great. And then everyone realized that the two maps that are on the sheet were on opposite sides.
Oh,
of the
sheet.
I noticed that. I actually went, before the event, out and bought a second copy of the of the map pack for £30 just to have the extra sheet.
Oh, dear Lord.
And we also had freedom. This I'm going to segue for you. I'm going to do your job for you. We actually did some wonderful 3D terrain. So I was printing to the last minute, even managed to get somebody else with a 3D printer to help out. And we had 3D printed terrain for all of the hills.
It looked super.
Did some custom designs for the gantries that were one of the objectives, and we even had some Christmas trees.
I played in that game and it looked lovely, and it was an absolute barrel of laughs.
It was mental. The urban mechs, however, I do feel weren't that appreciated. I think.
Yes, it did seem to be a toss-up whether the volume of sheer hatred went on the urban mechs or Wolf's Dragoons. Oh, Clan Wolf.
Oh, but the one of the urban mechs actually did kill a gladiator.
Oh, yeah. Well, I headshot a stone rhino. I'm still quite pleased with that.
I'm not sure who did more damage to the smoke jaguars. The rest of the force or the smoke jaguar player with his incessant overheating.
Yeah.
When you've got a cauldron born, you do not fire all those weapons.
No, indeed not. So yeah, talking about that, painted or printed anything interesting lately?
So at the moment I'm working on the Thunderhead Studios what's it called? Sundered Wastes, which is basically a code for, they're not allowed to call it what it is because otherwise they'd get sued. But
it's, that about.
Sorry, I'll do the in brackets symbol here. It doesn't work on radio. The in brackets symbol compatible with the desert map pack.
Right, yes.
And it just happens to be compatible with all
as
of them.
As in, you can print them out and place them on the hills and they fit.
And they match, yeah. Compatible. So I've actually printed 7 out of the 10 maps so far. I've actually only got 2. In actual fact, you have interrupted my printing schedule because my 3D printer's sitting next to me and I've had to make sure I don't print because I was just about to start a 29-hour print of a level 5 or level 6 hill that's going to actually take up most of the build plate on my Ender 5. Absolutely huge, huge piece of...
mine is fortunately the other end of the workshop, and I believe it's printing reinforcing corners for 2x2 polystyrene boards at the moment.
Well, they're handy for that. On the other hand, my other 3D printer, the resin printer, is currently not behaving itself. And maybe we'll talk about that later when we talk a bit about 3D printing.
We should, I think. Yes,
it's a learning curve.
Isn't it just? Yes, it's one I have stayed clear of, but I said we'll cover that a little bit later. Moving on to upcoming events. I'll just run through them quickly. We, as in Peterborough War Games Club, are at Campaign at Milton Keynes, 11th and 12th of May. We haven't quite decided exactly what we're running yet, since... we're not quite sure whether we're going to run Battletech or Alpha Strike, or if we have enough manpower, both. But either way, if you're in Milton Keynes, it's in the big shopping mall, centre.mk, in the middle of Milton Keynes. It's actually open to the public, so we want to do something that's quick and eye-catching. But that should be fun. Moving on to the end of May, we have the English Nationals in Leeds, as previously mentioned on several episodes, 24th to 26th. I'm assuming I'm seeing you at that.
I still haven't managed to get to one because the problem is it's the weekend before UK Games Expo.
Yep.
And I honestly don't think I'm going to get away to both.
I've managed to get an exit pass for both. My wife is very understanding and also has a PS5 habit.
And I think you're on the right side of London as well. I'm down in Ashford.
Yeah, I can also take advantage of that to go and visit my dad in Hull on the way up. So it's sort of a kill two birds with one stone job. But that, I think, promises to be great fun.
What's the interesting thing about them as well is that the BattleTech English Nationals has its own very unique format. And that's the interesting thing about formats is they've run, for as long as I've known, because I've always toyed with going and I've looked carefully at their formats and whether I'd use it, they run this paired mech thing where they're basically give you a table, and that table has six combinations of mechs. And I don't know if they're going to do the same this year. I'm assuming they probably are, but you're only allowed to pick. So you're not allowed to just bring your own force. You have to pick from a selection each round of six pairs of mechs, and they go for this 2v2 format. Again, BV balanced, but it's interesting whether or not they will adopt the BattleTech Championship Circuit format, which is kind of being talked about. I don't know how official it is, really. But it's certainly they're trying out and in America at the moment. And I know there's been talk about using it at UK Games Expo. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it'll actually happen, I don't know.
I know that we'll get to UK Games Expo, but I know that one of the things that's planned for UK Games Expo is a grinder, just to draw people in.
I've never actually seen how a grinder works, because obviously we don't really have these big tier one conventions in the UK, apart from the UK Games Expo, which Catalyst hasn't had a presence at.
Until this year.
So this
Games
year.
Expo is 31st of May to the 2nd of June. And my notes appear to have that going backwards in time, so let's fix that.
It's definitely, because it's the last week of half term.
It's the last week of half term. Yes, indeed.
So which is great for me, because it means I can go on Friday.
No, the plan
although
is,
teachers have lots of holiday, we can't actually decide when we take them.
No, indeed not. My dad used to be a university lecturer, same thing applied. But yes, apparently there's talk of running a grinder, which is essentially you get issued a mech from the lowest tier, all of which are balanced by BV. Once you die, you move up a tier.
Nice.
So there's an incentive. There's an incentive to get stuck in, because you won't get a better mech if you don't get stuck in.
Yeah.
So that promises to be interesting.
Get something, just can't get people attracted in.
Yeah, quite.
And something maybe we'll talk about later about community building and the events I've kind of run.
Yeah. Then the other two we have Thanet Wargames Club, Broadstairs, are running a demo event on Wednesday, the 29th of April, which I gather, 20th of May, which I gather you might be popping down to.
Yeah. So I don't have, this is a number of chatting fingers, I don't really have a local games club. I seem to live in the middle of all of the local games clubs, but equally distance as far. And Broadstairs, which is where the Thanet Wargaming Club is about 50 minutes an hour by train. And, you know, in a working week, I can't get down there. But this is, again, in half term, so I can pop down there. And I've been up there a couple of times. And actually, I had Andy over to my place on Tuesday. We were actually playing a Republic of the Sphere versus Mercenaries 3150. Game which we had which was good fun, and so hopefully I'll be able to go along and take some shiny terrain, because I actually do think that having those 3D hills doesn't just look pretty, it actually really helps when you're teaching the game.
It's so hard on a cluttered hex map to visualize line of sight.
Yeah,
if it's just
some people
written
don't
on it.
Like some people don't like the 3D terrain. I actually have people turn around to me and say they don't like it. They feel it makes the thing cluttered. But when you've got things like Hextech, and I'll plug Hextech here particularly, because it's scaled to the mech so well, and there are some 3D print, 3D designers who don't scale their buildings well, which means they're not in the exact level increments, which means sometimes you look at it and you go, oh, what level is that? I have no idea. Let's call it level 4. But Hextech is always scaled to the right height. and always scaled to support mechs. So their buildings are great because they always support mechs. And you can instantly say, oh, well, that's got line of sight, or that works. And without too much of a... While still giving some nice aesthetics. It's not like... I know some people, and all the kudos to these people who do this, because it does look good. But people who do the kind of not just because it takes a lot of work, but the cutting out foam board and things like that to make hills. And that's really nice and helpful. But what the hex tech stuff above that is, that actually looks brilliant. The texture on the sides. And in particular, I'm not paid to endorse these people, by the way. I just really love it.
I'm with you. I have a large bunch of their STLs that are waiting in the print queue.
The sandstone ones, and I've actually been painting those with huge amounts of shading paints and different things, and deciding whether or not I'm going to put layers on the sandstone. But it actually just looks brilliant. And the other thing I discovered was this stuff. There's a shop in the UK called Hobbycraft, and they have this range of paints, arts and craft paints on spray cans, which include a granite paint. Mm-hmm. And if you take that paint and then spray it onto the side of your heels, you get this perfect little granite texture to it, and it looks brilliant.
The only issue with it is, if it's the stuff I think it is, it does tend to clog the nozzle very easily.
Oh, you have to keep washing the nozzle, and it takes
because there's lots of little bits in the paint.
It takes about 24 hours to dry, and the solvent's quite strong. Yeah, but once it dries, it looks brilliant, and it's very, very tough.
Which leads us to the other event that I left out in order, because it's yours. Bad Moon Mercenaries.
That'll be me.
Moon Cafe, which is not that far from London Bridge.
It's on 10 the 20th
of April.
That's not long.
And this is Bad Moon Mercenaries, which is basically your brand, isn't it?
One of the brands. Kind of, Bad Moon Mercenaries is kind of like a brand, because I always want to keep things in a memorable way. So by calling it Bad Moon Mercenaries, it basically keeps people coming back to that. And we have been running events at the Bad Moon Cafe for a while. It's a bit tricky as an event coordinator there, because I literally book the table space, unlike other events. And it might sound bitter here, but it's probably because I am. Unlike other popular game systems like Marvel Crisis Protocol and things like that, I don't get any special treatment by the shop. It's a brilliant shop, but they won't basically run the event. So I have to kind of book the tables as a customer, or I should say, I have to book three tables as a customer, three kind of big 6x4 in advance.
Yeah, it's taking the risk is the point.
And as long as basically the good thing is if they I get to cancel within 48 hours. So I have to sell the tickets 48 hours before. It also means that I have to give a shout out to my kind of treasurer, Richard, who handles the PayPal side of this. Because technically, not sure if anybody's aware, but we actually have a kind of a rule in the Catalyst demo team. And Catalyst demo team members are officially supposed to never take money for anything. Mm-hmm. And that actually creates a bit of an issue when you're running events, because we're not too sure how you sell tickets.
Yeah, but the rule is, I think you're allowed to take it to forward it on as for venue costs. If it's easiest for you to do that,
I get around it by kind of nominating a secretary. Treasurer, I should say, not secretary. Who runs the books, and so we do it through PayPal. And
fortunately, most of what I've done as an agent so far has been at War Games shows, so not an issue. But
the actual place is
a bit
great.
Of a different problem. Yes, yeah, lovely place. I mean, I went there for your Operation Guerrero game.
Huge, big 6x4 wargaming tables. So usually we have two games on each table.
Yeah,
and it works out as £12.50 a head. All that money goes straight to the shop. It's nothing's made on profit, and we also don't do price support. Although I've been known every so often to give out some 3D printed terrain, not mechs, just terrain. Another controversial thing, just terrain now and again. But the idea, we'd had a bit of a break from running events, mainly again due to real life stuff. And we'd kind of got kind of to about 8 consistently coming to the events. And I felt there were lots of people that would want to come. because there were lots of new players chattering on different social media. And I felt that it was time that we really needed a kind of an in for those people. And although some people turned around to me and said, oh, is this going to be a bit simple for us? You know, those people that have played the game for a while. Actually, a lot of people who have played the game for a while have been really up for turning up just so that they can play against the new people. Not just to beat them.
No, but
to actually play and teach them. And one of the key things that we say whenever we run these events for our kind of our brand, which is BattleTech Southeast UK, which is just a kind of a loose conglomerate of players who get together to organize events.
Yep. The link to the Southeast UK Discord will be in the show notes.
Yes, and we've got a Facebook group we've got this idea of our events are not competitive. You know, we don't run competitive tournaments. We run narrative events that are very supportive. So we try and avoid any kind of sense of too much competition.
I think that's actually moving on to the sort of the whole concept of community building. I think you don't want to teach a game competitively to start with, because then people get put off by failure, I think.
And there's also an element in other game systems of competitiveness that sometimes is a bit toxic, I think. And you get a feeling that people might turn up and, you know, feel that they're going to, you just get tabled. And without mentioning certain games, of course, we're aware that some people will have the win at all costs theme. Whereas I certainly say that when people are talking and playing BattleTech, unless we're two people who are very good at the game, who played quite a lot, and those people will tend to go at each other. otherwise people will say, oh yeah, you know, you could do this instead, or this can help, and they'll help out the other player.
I used to play a tournament Warhammer Ancient Battles, and I actually gave it up because there'd be 14 out of the 16 people who were absolutely lovely, friendly, would happily say, are you really sure you want to do that? And things like that. And you get two people who are, I don't care who you are, I'm going to table you, I'm going to win at all costs. And it just got to be no fun.
Yeah. And again, well, I'm segueing later into the community building section, that's a constant discussion about how you approach BattleTech events and how you design them. The whole kind of force building and competition, and some of the, I think, and even though I'm a demo agent, I'll say the flaws in what BattleTech is as a franchise, as a game system, I should say, rather than franchise, compared to other things like M&P or X-Wing, although X-Wing's got its own problems. We won't go there.
Yeah, but you predominantly teach Classic. Mustn't call it Classic. You predominantly teach BattleTech. Because I think we came at it as being a war games club. We predominantly teach Alpha Strike, but I think they both see. It seems with both of them that it's one of the nice things about it is that it's not that hard to put together a game that doesn't take. It doesn't have to take up a whole day or a whole afternoon of someone's time. I mean, I'm looking at this particularly from the show point of view, but it applies equally to your events. It's not like if you don't like it, you're stuck in a game for 3 hours, and equally, it doesn't. And both of them are quick to teach. That's the other beauty of both, I think.
Definitely.
I've discovered, I mean, did you, I don't know if you watched any of the Adepticon live streams, but there was a Alpha Strike game later on in the weekend with our new demo agent head. I think Brian, the art director, Brian Young? No, not Brian Young, that's the author. The other Brian. Mike Stackpole and Brian Young, all of whom had clearly not played Alpha Strike in years, if at all. And they struggled so much for the first round. And by about round three, they were doing all their own calculations, rolling their own dice. The demo agent who knew what they were doing stood behind them and given up, left them to get on with it.
Oh, and Alpha Strike's really good in that regard. You've got one rule book, everything's in there. And to be quite honest, you can play 95% of the game without looking at most of the rulebook.
And the rest you can play off the QRS that comes in the box set.
And the, you know, it gets a bit more crunchy when you get into some of more of the specialized equipment and some of the alternate rules, and you can introduce a bit more crunch, although that's kind of my issue with it. I don't like feel it's crunchy enough. And although I'm happy to play Overstrike. I'm going to go on record, and I might be unpopular for saying this, saying I don't particularly like Alpha Strike as a game. And I know some of my more kind of some of the BattleTech players, when they go from playing full on BattleTech to playing Alpha Strike, feel somehow a little wanting when they play it because they're so used to the grit. But then we have to step back and look at it from the other point of view of people who are coming in new to the hobby. And having a simple card with just, you know, a row of armor and a row of internals and a few stats is so much easier. Whereas us old guys here are constantly comparing it to, oh, how does that Hunchback 4P compare to what it is in Classic? And I'm calling it Classic now.
There you go. Stop that.
Be doing it. So, you know, it's a difficult transition, but I do like the idea that you can play, and we've played a 1500 PV game. I know people have played more, but we played this massive 1500 PV game once with a guy called Richard, who runs he's in charge of the Enfield Gamers in North London.
Shadowblade on the Discord.
Shadowblade.
Lovely bloke.
And Martin, who is, well, let's just say he has enough BattleTech stuff sealed that he is going to start a BattleTech museum at some point. Sealed. I mean, he buys two of everything.
And puts one away.
And he came along and we played two competing Jade Falcon galaxies against Clan's House Horses with 1500 PV on each side.
That's a serious game.
It was mental.
Mental. Could do that in Classic, but you better have a table you can set up for the whole weekend.
We actually played it in about 5 hours. We could have gone longer, but the shop was shutting. But it was part of a demo day. And the funny thing was, me and the other Jade Falcon player, Martin, were actually not cooperating. We're actively basically competing against each other who could kill more house horses, which means overall we were losing. Because we basically just kept goading each other whenever someone did Brilliant. Something wrong. That's a typical clan rivalry.
Yeah, but that said, I mean, you can do the same thing with Classic BattleTech. If you want to just teach, give someone a mech.
Oh,
give them a map. You know, say, come at me, and we'll show you how it all works. And I think there are an awful lot of game systems out there that are a lot harder to teach than BattleTech in both forms.
The funny thing about BattleTech is it scales.
Yeah.
Which means you can scale from very small games to very large games.
How many decks did we have on the table for the worldwide event?
Oh, we had 6 Lances versus 3 Stars and a Star of Elementals as well.
12 so, players.
Yeah.
I mean, we were done in what? It was 8 hours pretty much, wasn't it?
Every player had a Lance or half a Star.
Yeah. And every player also had a great time.
Yes, no, a whole star, yeah, and it was, and we, you know, I think I was hoarse by the end of it because I was keeping it all going and you know, calling out stuff and, you know, using my teacher voice, I think, to keep the children in line.
That's how I get by the end of war game shows for very similar reasons.
But it was good, and sometimes I got to the end of it and thought maybe I could have scaled it to half of this, but it was just fun to have so much.
It was very impressive.
We actually used a initiative card system, so we actually for every lance had a card, and we shuffled the cards up, and that's how we did initiatives.
I very much liked that, and that
worked really really well because it kept everybody in, and we also had a strict no micromanaging. This is a really important. If you ever play a multiplayer game, enact the no micromanaging, which means nobody can tell anybody anything about where they can move their mechs other than in character. You know, so you're not allowed to say, oh, if you go here, you'll be a plus two. No, you can't talk to the other players about them moving.
You
their
can
max.
Say, go and crest that ridge.
Unless, of course, they're new players, which yes. I think they'll be anybody.
In which case, you give them a little bit of advice.
Absolutely. One of the things about the Battletech worldwide events is they're not for new players. Maybe that's the flaw of it, but it's actually the worldwide event is a celebration of everything massive about Battletech. And I think it's very hard to actually get a new player in. Because actually the floor of the big multiplayer game is you are actually relatively playing, and I don't notice this because I was running it, but you're relatively playing quite slow because the amount of time you get, because you have to wait for your turn to come around again. And for that, you have to have a bit of patience and really be invested in the game. Whereas,
I mean, there was one turn where I went, right, I've gone. The next five people after me are not on my half of the table. I'm going to find my lunch.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, but that was good. Everyone enjoyed it. But it definitely, if you're thinking of running a worldwide event for new players, that's not the right kind of event, really.
But that I didn't realize until later that worldwide event came in both Classic and Alpha Strike versions, didn't it?
It was an Alpha Strike. I mean, unfortunately, we didn't really have time in the schedule to put in the Alpha Strike version of it. But it would have been nice to run both. We actually got it. It was a very short turnaround time between it being launched and the Christmas deadline for it being reported.
There's a certain degree of, oh my God, do you want me to source what mechs?
Yeah, I mean, luckily they used almost all of the mechs that you had and also some of the mechs you could choose. So I was able to source all of the mechs and... Due to a quirk of fate, I actually had most of the mechs painted as Warrior House of Jewelry, which is close to what was it, Warrior House Heritage. So basically they were still Capellans, yeah. And it meant that we didn't have a hodgepodge of different colours, which is the problem.
Yes.
In a worldwide event, you can't really be expected to buy all of the mechs. And paint them all for the Pacific faction colors, but luckily I just happened to have a lot of them, well, and they do give flexibility. Choices. So you do get a chance to you know, it recommends two mechs, and then you get to pick as the person organizing it, you get to pick two more in each lance.
Which gear to the ones that you've got in the box.
The mech I didn't allow to take, and I was going to put it in there. And then someone pointed out to me that it didn't really exist in that time period, even though it was on the mall, was this horrible Thunderhawk. Or is it the Thunderhawk? No, Pillager. Mm. And you might be used to the Pillager with two Gauss rifles, but this is a Pillager with two long toms.
Oh, come on.
That would be so fun.
Joking.
it's like two long toms mounted on it, and it could literally just walk, plant itself and start firing long tom rounds across the table.
I'll just sit in this corner here and guess where people are going to be in a turn's time.
We thought it might have been a bit disruptive for the scenario to have that.
Oh dear Lord. Right. You added community building to my agenda. So what did you want to cover?
So really, how do you go about, you know, running events and building them up? And the core thing is having a place to play.
Mm.
And that's what everybody needs. And then actually that's kind of the thing I lack personally, because my closest venues which play Battletech are the Mug and Meeple, which is an hour and about 20 to 30 pounds by train away.
That's Gravesend, isn't it?
Yeah, in Gravesend.
Right in the middle of Gravesend.
And they just ran an event recently. I can't remember which, a Jihad event actually, which I was really sad I couldn't get to. I was up in Clacton at the time because I wanted to take my Celestials. But they run events there at least once a month. Their next event is unfortunately on the 1st of June, which is when we're in the... Games Expert.
I don't have that in the diary. I shall have to fix that.
So they run events there. At the moment, that's the only other place, but for myself, that runs events. And we've got then small groups of players. So we've got the, and I'll shout out to them different clubs in the area. We've got the Enfield Gamers, where Alpha Strike's very popular, but also some classic. And we've got the Fanatic War Gamers with Andy. And Andy's been leading a jihad to convert people to Battletech there from various other game systems that are played. And that's about it.
Except there's a couple also... of folks trying to get something going in Canterbury.
Yes, I mean, there is a problem with the... again, it's difficult to say against stores, but there are a couple of really nice stores in Canterbury. One's called Dice and Destiny. And they're great. The people run it. They run some events there, but their downstairs is very, very small and very busy, and it's almost impossible to book any table space there. And that's the problem, is having table space. In terms of stores that stock Battletech, the only store in the whole of Kent that I know of that stocks Battletech is the Mug of Meeple. Right. And then if you look in London, there's only a couple of stores, Darksphere Shepherd's Bush, which has got a really big gaming space, but it's on the kind of wrong side of London to me. But Orc's Nest, which is always good, but they don't
go wrong with Orc's Nest, can you?
They don't have any gaming space at all, unfortunately.
They're incredibly small and cramped like a shop, but they are amazing.
Yeah, so that's it. And you think that's the real problem. And we often have also the issue of, and it's difficult to say against this, to be too critical, but stores that will actively ring fence and not allow you to play. I won't name names, but there are stores out there who will not, in the kind of Games Workshop format, will not allow you to play or book a table, even though they've got tables, will not allow you to book a table.
Some of them, that policy is actually we won't allow you to book tables for things we don't stock.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Which is, I suppose, understandable. Yeah,
from a certain point of view. But that's part of the problem I've got at the moment is actually, and again, I'm not, as demo agents, we're not sales.
No.
We are demo agents. But we do try and encourage shops. And actually trying to encourage shops to sell Battletech is quite hard at the moment. I've been, even though we run all our events at Bad Moon Cafe, which is, again, I'm not going to say anything bad about them, I haven't managed to convince them to stock to stock even a starter set of Battletech.
Yeah, now over where I am, we're lucky in that I'm chairman of Peterborough War Games Club. We have a regular Monday venue. So I can run Battletech there anytime I say I'm running a game of Battletech, who wants to play, which is nice. So that's just been growing. Mostly we've been running Alpha Strike, but we have had a tournament which actually finishes this month, assuming that the two teams on top don't tie, which is currently they are, and I'm one of them. But we've so from that point of view, we've got that. We have 5 games cafes and games live centres in Peterborough. It's ridiculous. We've got the Rift, which has a couple of tables downstairs, and there's actually a shop, and stocks what little Battletech Asmodee will deliver them, which is always the same 3 boxes. seriously.
Asmodee doesn't help, I think.
No.
That's often been said.
Then there's Inspired. There's a Games Cafe, whose name I escape, right in the middle of town. There's the Angle up near me, and there's a new one that's just opened, which is very much a war games centre rather than a games cafe, which is the Vault. They are very keen. They've said they really would like us to run a Battletech demo there, and I think what I'm going to do with that is we've said that what we might do is some of us at the club want a long weekend game, which we can't get out of our venue. So we might book the Vault just to put on a game that people will have to come and watch. If they want to ask questions, roll dice, dip in, they can. Because there's a game we want to play, basically. And moving on from that, we'll say, and then we'll run a demo night on a Thursday, which is their scheduled demo night.
Yeah. See
who we can pull in, and then move on if... What they do is they have monthly game. There's a monthly Kill Team, for example. There's a monthly Star Wars Legion. And if we get enough take-up, we'll run a monthly Battletech there. And I think that might be quite a good way of getting in.
I mean, where the Battletech UK Southeast came from was because we've got these lots of small islands of players. So of like four or five, you know, players, or even three, or even a couple of people that play. And we wanted a way to try to bring everything together. And so this is where we came up with the idea of running events where we would kind of try and more centrally locate and advertise and bring people in. And that's where the community building came in a bit, about really talking to lots of different groups. And sometimes I get lost on Facebook because I'm a member of so many different groups.
Yeah.
Not because I see
a Battletech post and you go, hang on, which group was that from?
Yeah, but because I want to kind of keep up with who's there, and also the explosion of different social media platforms. So I didn't hardly ever use WhatsApp, and the people at the there's actually a gaming group in London, run by quite a few people, including someone called Alex, who they use WhatsApp to talk about a lot of things. And they use another new, I actually can't remember what this is called, another new social media thing, which involves organizing events. And this is part of our problem, is actually communicating.
Yeah.
And people even realizing, how do you get players to discover? And just that constantly kind of trying to find new ways to communicate that you exist as a game.
One of the reasons I'm hoping this podcast will help in general.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all just how you get the story out there, how you get the story out of what's going on.
Yeah, I am making a thorough pain in the neck of myself on Facebook groups every time a new episode comes up. Nobody slapped me for it yet, fortunately. But I'm working on the theory that, you know, we can, if there's a way of try at least to draw some of these groups together, and even just the whole point of the directory on the site is that I haven't seen another listing of where people play, where you can play. I know it's not complete.
Oh, we have got a on the Battletech UK Southeast Discord.
Ah, yes, you have.
We do have a revamped stores and clubs guide, which I try and update.
I may steal bits of that to put on the directory, if
not
that's okay with you.
Not everybody uses Discord. It's because that, trying to find, you know, I think, again, you just have to basically go into everything. And then I know sometimes, and I'll put my hands up and say, I've sometimes rubbed people the wrong way by posting stuff on their site, on their kind of like community group, to encourage people to come to events. And even though I'm not a member of that group, you know, you have to be a bit careful, because you want to encourage players who play at a local games club. Obviously, you can't do it with shops, because that's another problem. I can't, if I'm running something at Bad Moon Cafe, I can't post something on the social media of another shop, because that they're in direct competition.
No,
well, not really, but that isn't really allowed. But I can post on like a different, you know, group from different small
you can
groups,
sort of, you can just sneak in a level of indirection. You don't actually mention the event, but you eventually mention the Discord the event's posted on.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a tightrope to walk, because you also don't want to rub up your friendly local game stores the wrong way.
Oh no, absolutely not.
And you know that at the end of the day, those are the people that are stocking it in. I mean, it is tricky. The other thing I'd say, if you're planning to run events, if you can get a friendly local game store on your side, like you've got there,
yeah,
that's great, because you're running events there, people will turn up, people will buy stuff, and shopkeepers will be happy.
Yeah, one of the nice things talking to Joey at Vault is he said that if a game takes off, he will always try and stock it.
And if we don't have the game shops, we won't have people to places to play.
No.
It's quite useful to have that.
It's fascinating. Well, back when I was co-presenting the Meeples and Miniatures podcast, we had an interesting discussion with a US guest on the difference between the US hobby and the UK hobby. And the UK hobby, the US hobby, certainly when we had the discussion, was much more store-based.
And that's because combination. America has space.
And it's also big.
Yeah, it's big. And that's the thing, what we... Sometimes we don't get that in the UK. I mean, I do, because I have to do this to travel around. How far are you going to travel?
Yeah, the point I was going to make, though, is that since we recorded that episode, when we recorded that episode, we were saying, you know, most of us have a club. And I that's getting less so. If you look on the directory for Tales from the Periphery, more than half of those are stores.
Mm. I'd say you're lucky there. I mean, we maybe have the opposite problem in Kent, that we don't have those quality stores as many. And again, I'll shout out, there are some like the Mug and Meeple, but those quality stores that are willing to go out and support the game. And it's a constant disappointment and fight to get them and you know, to get them either A, to allow you to play, or B, to stock the game.
And C, to actually get some stock.
Yeah, yeah.
I cry almost every time I do a game at a war game show, which is the other place we do at least attempt to draw people into the community. I come with handouts for the podcast and the Discord, the UK Discord. Is almost invariably the guys from the pit are there. The guys from the pit are fabulous. They must have got to get to nearly every war game show in the UK that's within a sensible commuting distance of where they are, which I think is somewhere halfway down the A1 between me and London. And the guy is pretty much crying in frustration because I'm there with Battletech game and he can't get Battletech to put on his stand.
Now, the number of shows that I've run, and I've run stalls out, and I've run quite a lot. I tend to try and get to, and that's another one. Actually, have we put that one up? Something to add to the upcoming events.
Mm-hmm.
We have got Broadside.
Broadside.
So Broadside is on the 6th of June. It's in Chatham, I think. Am I getting my geography completely wrong? It's
don't know, but I can find out.
It's I'm trying to think, call it up on my phone here, but it's a quite a big games here. It's run by now I'm actually completely forgetting who it's run by now. Let's have a look. It's a good radio, I'm hanging space here.
Oh, it's not the first time I've done that.
There you go.
Podcast.
Milton 100. The Milton 100 Gaming Club. And they are great and they've been very supportive. And I'm running, I'll work out what I'm running, but with I and a couple of helpers are going to be running a demo table for that.
And that's in Gillingham.
Yeah, Gillingham.
8th of June.
Just down the road. 8th of June. It's a Sunday. And
yes.
It's the Sunday after.
No, it's a Saturday.
Is it Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
Oh, it's a Saturday.
It'll be on the events directory here just as soon as I'm done with it. Podcast.
After the week after the
UK Games Expo. UK so Games if you Expo. Are not War Games Day out by then.
Yes, you can do more. And it's they've got some great things. They have tables from all of the different wargaming clubs. And you can go along and try games. And the number of times there we've had like stalls where nobody is talking about Deck.
And it's not their fault.
One person, and we find it. The first thing we do when if we get to these places is walk around, find out whoever's stocking the Battletech, and then plug it. And
just,
one year,
just so we can say, you know, when somebody says, "I have really enjoyed this. What do I do now?" And it's the over there.
Yeah, and one year though, it backfired because we basically went around, and there was one place, and he had a box of old Raupapa miniatures, like a whole box, and. We could say, okay, we'll plug that to the other players. Before I know, the other person running the stand went and bought the ball.
Whoops.
Because it was just this huge box of the old kind of like Ralph Barber miniatures. And he just said, can I have the box? I said, yeah.
Yeah, the bring and buy at the Milton Keynes show last year is where I picked up Total Warfare and a couple of Lance packs, which I think the first of the new stuff by books. It's hard when there's, you know, I could have sold probably 10 copies of a game of Armored Combat at shows this year.
And I'm not going to be completely negative to these gaming companies, the game shop company, the person running the friendly local game store, because if I go flip side, it is a hard business.
Yeah.
And
it's a risk.
And there are some great friendly local game stores in Kent, like Chaos Cards, which is a huge organization that does mail order, but they have a shop as well. And they had Battletech, but they've stopped having it in the shop, but you can buy it online.
Yeah.
But then places like Ragnarok, which is in Chatham or Gillingham, one of those two, and quite a few other places that are great gaming shops, because I go there and play other games, but actually realizing that they've got to make a profit and they want to get in what's currently selling, whether that's MCP, whether it's Warhammer, often it is Warhammer, of course, whether it's Magic. I mean, we've got a small, really, really nice game shop in Ashford called The Consultant Gamer, and lovely, friendly staff. Cannot convince them to play to, you know, to get Battletech in. And they stock basically two things. They stock CCG, well, TCGs or whatever you call them now, so Pokemon and Magic and Warhammer and board games. And that's it. But that's how they make their money. And it's convincing these people, and I think this is one of the big things, it's convincing these people that Battletech is on the rise. It's just this massive phenomenon. It's momentum is just growing.
Having Catalyst, having a big presence at UK Games Expo is not going to do nothing but good on that score.
But I think the next one, this is a big issue, is, and this is an issue that is constantly being talked about by the demo team, without breaking any NDAs or anything, is...
Well, you're okay doing it to me. It's just the rest of the business.
it's the format issue. It's although Battletech scales, so you can play any game you want, you can play one versus one, you know, without any BV and just work on tonnage, or you can play BV, or you can play whatever you want. That is its flaw as well. Whereas if you turn up to an MCP game, there is a way to play MCP.
Yes.
There are some other ways to play in campaign, but they have a set format. If you play X-Wing, it has a set format. If you play Infinity, it has a set format. If you play... I don't play Warhammer, but I'm guessing if you play Warhammer, it has a set format, and these formats are...
Probably less so, and I think the divide you've actually picked out on there is Warhammer is more towards the wargame end of things, and I think it's possibly the problem with Battletech is that it's designed to be open-ended, it's designed to be potentially scenario-based, and nobody's really laid down the law... or informally, and said, this is a good starter game.
Yeah, in a way, I wouldn't say it was designed to be open-ended. It just is, because when it came about, those modern games that came about in basically the resurgence in games from 2013 when X-Wing first came out, was to have these kind of set-piece scenarios. And it's quite valuable because you know what you're going to do. You turn up and you can say, I'm going to play a game. And you don't have to negotiate the parameters of the game. You can just play the game. But that being said, this is one of the things the community is part of my kind of like biggest issue when I'm running games is I have to then define a certain rules. And on my blog, which I'll give a little plug, is comstar.home.blog.
And in the show notes,
it's kind of like my kind of amusing. There's lots of different things there. One of the articles I wrote was that because everybody asked, "Well, how do I get into Battletech?" And rather than writing down another long response, I just basically created a post for it. Every time someone asks, I can just paste the post on there and update it every so often with new things. But I actually did a series of articles called How to Play Battletech, which may sound actually a bit conceited because there are so many ways, but
yes,
it was an idea to kind of like say, this is how you might go ahead. This is a good size game. Because everyone's saying, oh, what size game is a good size game? And you'd often, you know, have to say, okay, right. So if you want to play a good 2 to 3 hour game of Battletech, which is a typical kind of like night at the game, night out with the, you know, at the games club, is going to be a 5,000 BV if you're playing 3025 technology with 4 mechs versus 4 mechs, and there you're done. And you have to be very careful because you know, and I'm going to mention the wonderful thing that we're going to get, but also it's going to cause a lot of arguments, I can imagine. And you know what it is in the Kickstarter. What's the thing in the Kickstarter do you think that's got the most potential, despite it being great, to cause the most arguments in games?
From some of the new rule, the extra little bits and bobs
something very, very small that they slipped in.
Go on.
It's the Savannah Master.
Oh, dear Lord. Yes, I'm wrong about that.
It's the Savannah Master which actually illustrates exactly why you have to be so careful. Because we all know that if you did a strictly, I'll have 5,000 BV, you have 5,000 BV, go away and build a force. That person's going to come back with 50 million Savannah Masters. I don't know how much they have. I think you could get at least 500,
it's
actually.
Something insane, isn't it?
It is. And whenever we run games, like, so for instance, I ran a game at my house just on Monday and Tuesday, and we basically just say, right, you need to have between 5 and 12 mechs. You need to have between 0 and 6 conventional infantry. You've got 20,000 points to spend. Your skills can be, this is a maximum, and you can have one person who's elite. And yep. If you don't do that, you get silly things. Like, you get, and this is the horror stories of Baltech, you get people bringing 0-0 sprint VTOL pilots with tag, and people with 8-8 pilots piloting mechs with Arrow 4. You can see where I'm going with this, can't you?
So or an Obi with an Obi Crockett.
Yeah, these farmers who basically have never been in battle mech press the button for the Arrow 4. It goes up in the air, and these ace heroic 0-0 pilots aim the tag, and because they cost so little, it breaks the game, and the number of units breaks the game.
A Savannah Master is BV 215.
So 215 divided by 5,000. We'll leave that as a little maths test for our audience.
Well, 25 or so. Or thereabouts.
And the constant arguments, yeah. So it's very, very important to set these boundaries, and that's part of the issue. Is you've also then got to have the discussion on rules. You have to say, right, are we going to play introductory tech, which is what we would call for a
30-25,
or anything that's just basically in the Battletech game of armored combat or introduction box little booklet, or do we play the standard rule set, which is Total Warfare and tech manual, or do you play the advanced rule set and then you start getting into things like, you know, into the tactical operations, which
hardened armor. And
to be quite honest, the problem with 3151, the Ilkhan era, is you almost need that because there's so many things. And actually, this is kind of the advantage of the battle mech manual. And if someone was saying, what book should I buy? Although I don't like it for some reasons, the battle mech manual is a good book to buy because it has lots of technologies like variable speed pulse lasers or stealth or hardened armor that aren't in Total Warfare. And it's kind of a nice bridging book. It has quirks which aren't in Total Warfare.
I don't know about you, but they just so appeal to the role player in me.
Yeah, they're great. Again, not at all balanced. Again, that's like, again, no. a narrative thing. There is some serious thinking. Again, I'm not hopefully saying anything I shouldn't, but there's some serious thinking about completely recosting and rewriting quirks. I don't know how that's going on. I know that it's been talked about. The worst one is, of course, Oblique Attacker, which is the silliest quirk ever, which is you can target any hex on the board with indirect fire without a spotter, and you just end up with people bringing, you know, large amounts of LRM carriers and obliterating hexes one hex at a time.
To be fair, the time I did that, I only brought a lance worth of indirect fire capable mechs.
It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, but it was an archer and a crusader and a catapult and a longbow.
We ran quirks at the event, at the worldwide event, because that was in there. A couple of the things had quirks, and one of the mechs that had weapon specialist and was getting like -2 for pulse lasers and -2 for weapon specialist was just killing things.
That might have been, well, my Stalker had one of those, I think.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. So again, there are lots of things about Battletech that have to be negotiated. And this is where I think the idea of having a common format might be a good thing. And in some ways a bad thing, because players like me are happy to negotiate. I'm happy to sit down, and the GM in me, because I've been a GM, you know, my entire gaming life, was happy to say, right, this is the date, this is the number of mechs, this is what you can take. And also things like the fluff, so how many mechs do you have? Well, they should be arranged in lances. Battle armor, for instance. So if you're I don't know, a 40k player or someone coming in from another war game like Infinity, and you're faced with battle armor, and you have to explain, right, I've got some battle armor, and I've noticed on the multi unit list, on the master unit list, I can get fours, fives, or sixes. Why wouldn't I just take six each time? And then you have to explain, oh, but in the inner sphere, battle armor in groups of four, but if you're clan, they're in groups of five.
Five.
And if you're Word of Blake and Comstar, they're in sixes.
Yes.
And then people say, well, why can't I just take one elemental? Oh, but that's not in the fluff. And this idea of fluff versus game of mechanics is quite a hard one to get across to people.
It is, and I very rarely praise Flames of War. It's one of the things Flames of War does right, in that you can get a sheet for a given unit that says, here's what you can pick.
Yeah.
And I'm not a massive fan of Flames of War for a number of reasons, mostly to do with me being a historical wargamer and Flames of War being chess with tanks. But that it does do right.
I mean, it's the same.
And it will be interesting to see. I mean, I'm wondering if this is something that's going to come out in the Force Manuals.
Maybe. I mean, this is really interesting to me with the Master Unit List. Because the master unit list is, sometimes people like the master unit, some people hate it.
And I love it.
And it's a great resource, not always 100% accurate. You have to take it with a grain of salt. You know, I'll give one example of the problem, that if you look at playing mechs from a certain area, you can get a rifleman free.
Yeah.
If it's a rifleman free, I think it is. The Amaris one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got four Gauss rifles, and it can fire four times, and they were only ever made by Maris, and they only ever existed on Terra, but it's on the master unit list. So, or you know,
this is the BattleTech equivalent of the Flames of War. I have a Jagdtiger, or a Sturmpanzer IV, Sturmtiger, of which they only made about 12.
But there are, and again, I have to step back here and look at myself as being a bit too pedantic on this, and saying, well, there are people that just don't care, who want to play.
They're allowed to not care.
Who want a list. And then there are some people who absolutely I've talked to, great players who really like BattleTech, but actually don't really want to follow the
law.
The law or the multi-unit master unit list at all. We'll just what I have generally termed in my blog article open play, where you basically play whatever you want, and that's an interesting difference in the way we approach games. And you can't tell, obviously nobody is telling anybody, this is very important for people start shouting at their computers in rage, nobody's telling anybody how that they should play BattleTech, and all of this is just the opinion of two people that have played for a while, but it's like really up to you how you want to play. If you want to take four mechs against four mechs, and you can choose anything you want, then you can do that. But
and even if you don't want to paint them and just play with grey plastic on a bare hex mat, more power to you.
Yeah, cardboard cutouts. Which amazing brings us into a nice segue to the bugbear that we currently face at the moment of 3D printing.
Yes. Pause for a sidebar. We're now at an hour and a half.
Okay.
I'm seriously considering a 3D printing episode.
I think 3D printing episode would be good. All I'd say on 3D printing very briefly is, it's a great thing to get into if you want to print scenery, if you want to do a filament printer. You can get into it for £160. I saw a video of something called the Bamboo A1 Mini, which just looked brilliant, which was £200. And unlike my Ender, which looks like a mechanic kit, that literally looks like a professional piece of equipment.
Very nice looking piece of kit, isn't it?
It was. And it doesn't
require any smelly... I've in fact just recommended it to a friend who was asking about 3D printers. It
doesn't require any smelly chemicals or anything like that. And also it won't basically infuriate your local game shop if you turn up with 3D printed scenery, because most, you know, the scenery is great. And the bugbear is, and again, this probably is a whole discussion.
It
might be good for a good panel episode.
I think so.
To the world of 3D printing miniatures. And I have to say, even though as a Catalyst demo agent, I've kind of stepped into that. And
I have a little. but you won't catch one on any official table. I've never been on.
But my rationale for doing it is very simple, that in games that I play, I might get to a situation where I want to play four archers, or I want to play four archers that are painted as the 25th Russell Hark regulars, which Sung actually did recently, or I might even want to do something completely insane, which is still in canon, like play 12 Griffins, because in the Star League, it was quite often to have companies all of exactly the same mech.
Yeah, entire, or not even that. Wars on the Border mentions that, or was it with Wars on the Border or Edge of the Dragon, entire companies of Panthers.
Yeah, oh, that'd be amazing. I mean, I printed four Panthers for Draconis Combined Force. Now, if I was to go away and go on to buy and buy that, and this is one of our flaws of our Force Pack situation.
You have to buy, if you want to do a company of the damn things, you need to buy 12 Force Packs.
It's just insane. But I will absolutely say that the quality of the BattleTech miniatures is wonderful. And only if you are really, really, really into it where you get, you know, where your 3D printing, you know, it's a hard, the resin thing is a hard hobby.
I think that's going to be a whole episode, I think.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
so
I won't get
can
into
talk
that.
About on that.
It's a hard hobby, but I'm not going to, you know, you're still getting best results from just buying the packs. But
yeah,
I think there's space for both. Obviously, not in an official capacity.
couldn't possibly say that in an official capacity if anybody from Catalyst is listening, which I kind of hope they are, because it would mean we got an audience. Anyhow, so I guess we'll call that it for today, and hopefully we can have you back, or possibly you and other folks with an interest in 3D printing, and we'll do a proper full-on 3D printing, how to get into it, what to do for scenery, what to do for things that we probably shouldn't talk about in front of Catalyst, and so on and so forth at some point. So I think that'll be a great idea for an episode.
Happy to come back again. And if you want to find events again for BattleTech UK Southeast, go to our Discord, BattleTech UK Southeast, or Facebook page. You can find me on Facebook on Strategos Level 3. And you can also find details, stuff on my blog, say comstar.home.blog. And last of all, not to rival your podcast, it's a completely different sort of thing. It's a bit much lower production value, I think, than your podcast.
actually have graphics.
I have a YouTube channel under Strategos Level 3, which has lots. And that's something we didn't even get a chance to talk about. That's the whole other episode, I think, about Megamech. It has lots of tutorials about using Megamech, not just to actually play online, but to actually use Megamech to play tabletop. I'm running a campaign at the moment where I'm using
Megamech. Kind of hoping to get you and Adam onto that.
It's absolutely great. And it's got other videos there about scenery and 3D printing and different things there. And hopefully my next project, I hope to do, if I ever get around to it, is to do a video about how to play vehicles. Because I think if people getting into that movie,
we're going to need that when the Kickstarter comes out.
Yeah, and that's something I definitely think that we will. One of the next events I run will definitely be a vehicle boot camp.
Yay!
I have to say though, again, controversially, I'm not a fan. Again, because I'm just too much someone who likes the grit of the game. I'm not a fan of the quick, what do they call it? I can't remember now. The support cards. No. No, the support cards are fine. It's the new
support vehicle rules. I like my crunch too much to use those.
Yeah, so we'll see how that one pans out.
Indeed.
And how popular that is.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you've just saved me having to write myself a checklist of the things I need to add to the show notes. So thank you so much for coming on. And hopefully we will talk again fairly soon.
Hopefully soon, yes.
My guest, Stuart Marsh, thank you.
Goodbye.
So, a massive thank you to Stuart for joining me on that episode. As ever, we're going to wrap up with the last little thing, which is additions to the directory. We don't have many this time out. I realised that while I had actually mentioned the guys at Spalding, I forgot to actually add them to the directory, so they get a bonus extra shout out as they meet on a Wednesday, I believe. The Vista Hall in Spalding, which is not that far from me. Also up in Blackpool, there is a store called Fazpack, which has Battletech demos about once a fortnight, run by Phil Walling, who is one of the demo agents. The next one is on the 23rd of April. If you contact the store or you pop onto the Discord and ask in #North-West-Battletech, I'm sure you can get more information. And the only other one is, I haven't added it to the directory yet because we don't have anything formal, but there's a few folks in Doncaster looking for regular home and some more games. So if you want to join them, if you pop onto the Discord again, and this time if you ask in the Yorkshire and Humberside channel, I am sure they will welcome you with open arms. Which only remains for me to once again thank Stuart Marsh, who is my guest for the episode, and have fun and roll good dice, and I'll see you in the next one. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. In short, give us some credit, don't make money out of it, and if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun!